Hey, listeners, before we begin, just quickly, I'd love to tell you about three ways you can support the Pop Culture Preservation Society. As you know, we are an independent podcast. We're not owned or paid by anybody. We do everything by ourselves. And all of our financial support comes from you, the listeners. So if you'd like to help us pay our bills so we can keep on trucking, here's what you can do. One, pledge your support with a recurring monthly donation on Patreon. There are three levels of support, and each one comes with exclusive bonus content. Just go to patreon.com or look for the link in our show notes. Two, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you know we had one? Even if you don't have any intention of watching anything on YouTube, do it anyway. Because when we get to a certain level of subscribers, we have a shot at getting a little compensation, and every little bit counts. Three, this one is new. Buy your books using our bookshop.org link. Bookshop.org is an online bookseller that benefits small independent bookstores. And when you use our link, we get a little bit of that love. All of these links will be in our show notes and in our email newsletter and in our link tree. But most importantly, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening and thank you for sharing with your Gen X friends. You are the reason we do this and we couldn't be more grateful to you. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking and may the force be with you.
I love a good hopscotch. I wonder how it got its name. I don't know. I guess we'll never know.
Well, there's hopping on one foot
and drinking scotch.
That is a neighborhood game.
Hello, world. It's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who would commit murder for a little road trip-sized box of Fruit Loops.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving a time before screens and digital distractions when our social lives revolved around the cul-de-sac and our neighborhood friends and strategic moments of Ghost in the Graveyard and Red Rover. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Oh, the wonders that I find in the playground in my mind, in a world that used to be. Close your eyes and
today we're taking a trip back to a simpler time, before smartphones, before helicopter parenting, and way before organized play dates. Today's episode, you guys, is all about neighborhood games, the ones we played in backyards and cul-de-sacs and empty lots, and often at night, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking kick the can, freeze tag, Red Rover, flashlight tag, and those epic hide-and-seek marathons that seemed to stretch until the streetlights came on. And I think this is a point that we all need to talk about a little bit. These weren't just games, right? These were our first tastes of freedom, of creativity, and of community. They taught us how to negotiate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're making rules to games. We're solving problems. We're making friends, maybe a few enemies, but definitely friends. They built resilience and they sparked our imaginations and gave us a sense of independence that is so hard to replicate today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think it is underestimated how much those experiences turned us into independent people and people who could get along with other kids. I mean, you didn't play with just your best friends in the backyard. You played with all the kids, whether yes. you got along with them or not. You figured it out and you included everybody. I mean, until you didn't. And then that turned into some sort of neighborhood thing you had to figure out, too. If somebody was excluded, mm-hmm. now there was some kind of negotiation or coming together or teams or sides or whatever. It was like a little microcosm of life, and we were figuring it out in our backyards.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no adults were getting in. You know, they mm-hmm. weren't coming and trying to solve the problems for us.
No.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was team building and problem solving at its finest, because yeah. I really do feel like now, if you get a group of 10-year-olds together, well, first of all, you would never have a group of 10-year-olds together at 9 o'clock at night anymore. Oh, no, that's, you
only
know.
Only if it's like, an away game.
Yeah, right? But like to play outside in your neighborhood
oh, no.
at night.
Oh, God,
I just
no.
don't think you do. If you get a group of 10-year-olds together, I really just feel like there's usually a screen involved.
Yes.
Yeah. We had to be so creative and come up with right. either games that we made up or the tried and true games. And with that came a lot of problem solving with rules and mm-hmm. who's breaking the rules and who's a cheater and how do you deal with the cheater.
Yeah.
I don't know that they have those types of basic lessons in what they're doing now.
Right, in Minecraft or...
Right. They get together and they play. They're looking at a screen of some sort, usually.
And think about it, too. Michelle, you were saying about when have you seen 10-year-olds, a group of them together? And also think about the neighborhood games that we played with, the age difference. I mean, we were maybe 10, but we were playing with some 8-year-olds and some 6-year-olds were probably in there, maybe some 12-year-olds. It was kind of age was not as much of a factor. Like you figured out how to play with the little kids and, maybe they got a little bit of a head start in kickball or whatever.
As a little sister, we were included.
Yes.
Because the little brothers and sisters were included in our neighborhood games. We all played together. So you're right. Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a really good point.
I think that the biggest difference here between our childhoods and today's childhoods is the level of prescription. Everything today is prescribed. Yeah. We didn't have anything prescribed. I didn't have a schedule. I didn't have anything on my schedule ever except like Sunday school. That was it. And I did a little experiment this year. I was teaching a class. You've heard me talk about this before. I was teaching a class for 4th and 5th graders on creative journaling inspired by Taylor Swift. And I just wanted to get a sense from them of how busy they were and what their lives were like. And so I had them come up to the board and write down their schedule. I just said that. I just want you to write your schedule down. And every single person literally had, on Monday, I have this. On Tuesday, I have this. I would guess each kid had probably 5 things they were signed up for. And where in that is there any room for their own decision-making or their own creativity? Michelle, you said this was so creative. Yeah, we were making up shit. We were making up our own shit. All of this is prescribed. When you go to an enrichment activity, I also ask them, how many of you signed up for these because you asked, or did your parents sign you up?
I was just going to ask you
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were things like soccer for the most part, like, oh, I love soccer. But most everything else, they said, oh, my mom signed me up. And please understand, we're not pointing fingers when we're saying this.
We are those parents.
Well, yeah. Yes. I did it.
Yeah. They had tons of stuff.
Yes. You know, I felt a little bit like this was my failure in parenting, is that I had this idealized vision of all the kids running around the neighborhood. And that's really what I wanted, except that there was no one outside to play with. We had tons of kids. They weren't home.
That's a good point.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They weren't home. And so then I have to solve that by signing them up for something.
Well, okay, but here's a good question, Kristen. How did you know they weren't home? Because did you call the parents or did Liam go and knock on doors? Because when we were little and my mom would say, go outside and play. If I looked down the street and I didn't see anybody, I'd go up to neighbors' doors and knock.
Yeah.
Is Ashley here? Can Ashley come out and play? I would challenge that kids today do not just go knock on doors.
Because
if you say, go outside and play, I bet Katie's home, and your kid would go, no, Katie's at piano, or no, Katie's at soccer. Or if you said, I just saw their car pull in, your child would say, I'm not going to go knock on their door.
No, God, no.
Text
they would
your
never
mom.
Knock on
Text
a door.
On mom,
never.
But we used to just roam the streets and knock on people's doors at random.
So here's a phrase that is not in anyone's vocabulary anymore. Is Stephanie home? Nobody says that
Can
anymore.
Can Stephanie play?
Can Stephanie play?
Yeah.
Come out and play.
Yes. We can lament that all day long. I just wonder, will the pendulum swing back eventually? Will it swing back?
I don't think so.
I don't know about this pendulum. That ship may have sailed.
Maybe. Maybe. Unless there's a concerted effort by an entire society to do it. But soon we won't have people who remember that anymore. Soon the parents will be the people who had the prescribed childhood. Mm-hmm. And so either they won't have any model or they will yearn for something different.
You know how we always have that joke, that old saying of like, oh, yeah, my grandma would say I had to walk 3 miles in the snow to school with no shoes. We're going to be the grandparents saying to our grandkids and listeners. We have a lot of listeners who already are grandparents. So tell us if we're right or wrong here, saying, back in my day, we used to just get sent outside to play, and we wouldn't come home till after the streetlights came.
And sometimes you weren't allowed inside. You'd try and go in, and I'd be like, nope, you can't come back till dinner.
I know, but that's going to be us. We're going to be the old people. Yeah. Our stories are going to be, we used to have.
This is such a treasured pastime for our generation, I think, and it's something we long for, so yeah. much so that, you know, we've had people reach out suggesting that we talk yes, about this yeah. as an episode.
It's so true. You can tell just by the comments that we've gotten from our Instagram posts and the DMs that we get from people about the games that we played outside, especially at night, that this is something that people want to talk about, and it's something that they treasure dearly. Maybe because it's gone, I don't know. So a long time ago, at least 2 summers ago, we were eating outside. So I know it was at least in the summertime. My friend Tony dropped the word ghoul at dinner. I don't know if ghoul means anything to anybody, but ghoul being the bastardization of the word goal, we think, we're not actually sure. And that could be, ghoul could be used interchangeably with base. I had not considered the concept of base, the importance of base in your childhood for 45 years. And just the concept of base or ghoul led to a whole conversation at dinner about how we played outside in our neighborhoods when we were growing up. I didn't really remember ghoul, but then my husband is like, ghoul, ghoul. Like,
all I'm thinking about is G-H-O-U-L.
Yeah, I am too.
Well, I don't think there's a spelling for it. I think I just put G-U-L-E, but Mike knew, and he did not grow up in the same place as Tony. And he said you would use it just like base. So like you're touching base, and somebody tried to tag you, and you're like, ghoul! We think, nobody really knows, but both Mike and Tony have talked about this. We're like, was it goal? We think it was goal. And that night, after talking about ghoul, that led to a whole topic of how we were a feral generation that entertained itself outside with endless games without the supervision of grown-ups, even after dark. And that topic went on the list. And that's how we got here today. So that's where this topic began, is with Tony going, ghoul! But there's also a book called One Alley Summer. It's a short book written in verse that takes place completely outside, mostly in the alley where all the kids played all day, every day. This is obviously not a contemporary novel. That would never happen today. And it's based on the author's experience growing up in the 70s in a neighborhood very similar to mine. And it turns out that she grew up just across the Mississippi River from me. So no wonder this book feels nostalgic for me. And it wasn't just the games they played, but the ways that you occupied your time and the situations that you found yourself in when you're outside all day long and you're not allowed back in the house. Like, there's always a house that you're afraid of. Like, does a mean lady live there? Or a witch? Or is it a boogeyman that maybe yelled at one kid one time, and from that one experience, the story grew so that now you think that guy's an ex-con who maybe went to jail for kidnapping children or something. Right. And maybe part of your day is daring someone to touch his house. You're going to touch it, and then you're going to run away.
Or God forbid the ball, like, went over the fence and into their yard.
Yes. And who's going to go get it? Yep, who's going to go get it?
That ball's left to die.
Yes. There were so many dares. Like, dares alone could be considered a neighborhood game. And in One Alley Summer, the loser of a bet has to put her arm through the hole in a chain link fence where a rabid dog lives. Now, does the dog actually have rabies? No, of course not. That's just neighborhood lore. There's a rabid dog, and she lost the bet, so she has to put her hand in the fence where the rabid dog lives, and you have to leave it there for 3 seconds. Like, that's the dare.
We had a rabid dog in my neighborhood in third grade, and one of our playmates got bit.
Yo!
And she had to have shots in her stomach.
In her stomach for
yes,
like, that was
for like months.
Yes. Okay, when was the last time you heard about somebody like getting bitten by a rabid dog and having to get shots in
their stomach?
And the needle was this long.
That long.
This long.
Horrifying.
Yes.
Or what about like stepping on a rusty nail or something?
Yes.
That too. And then you'd have to go get shots. And yes,
and the needle was this long. The needle was always this long.
Yeah.
I asked the author of the book, her name is Anne Ilvesucker, if she'd like to give us a comment for this episode. And she was so excited because we're talking about something that she really cares about. It. She cares enough about her childhood neighborhood outside time that she wrote a whole book about it. And she said this in part, "I grew up on a Minneapolis block with an alley. The alley was a kid world, especially in summer." And yeah, me too. Totally. I grew up on an alley too. She is speaking the truth. She says, my novel, One Alley Summer, is loosely based on that alley. It was the meeting place, the hub. I remember lots of foot races, particularly when somebody got new tannies.
Gotta test them out.
You're going to test out those tennies.
Yes. And especially that she says tennies, because I never heard the word tennies until I moved to Minnesota. Were talking about tennies. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know. She says, hours of horse and pig at the basketball hoop on my friend's garage. And most of all, and I'm not going to say what she says most of all, because it will play an important part in something coming up ahead. But I'm just so excited to have this book because it's written for children, but it speaks to us as a generation.
Yeah, we'll put that, listeners, we will put the link to that in our weekly reader this week. I'm excited to order it.
And we're going to put it in our bookshop.org bookstore. Sure. Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, we are.
Well, those memories are so fun to think about. I mean, I can see why she wrote a whole book about it. I mean, there's so many levels to those experiences. Most of my neighborhood games were played in Houston. Mm-hmm. And here's what I remember in terms of how like tactile this experience was beyond just the games, but it would be so hot and humid in Houston. And so I just remember how sticky I would be. And on top of that, we had mosquitoes were everywhere. So we also had to get doused with Off before we went outside to play at night, because that's when the mosquitoes came out was at night. Mm-hmm. And so you were sticky and that smell of Off.
Yes.
But now I think they have, you know, deep wood scent and unscented. Well, there was just one scent.
I remember
it was chemical.
Off scent. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it was just everywhere. And, you know, mom would say, close your eyes. And maybe I did. But, you know, you were breathing that in.
Yeah.
And that reminded me then of the mosquito trucks. So I don't know if, Michelle, if you can relate to this, but there would be these big fumigator trucks that would come out right at dusk and they would spray. And I had kind of forgotten about that until I read a comment that one of our followers sent us. And I just want to read it to you because this was so Husker doing. She said, the kids in my central New Jersey neighborhood used to all get on their bikes and ride after the bug man. That's in capital letters. When he would come around the neighborhood spraying his mosquito spray. And then in parentheses, she said, facts. Our mother used to close the front door and close the window so the bug spray wouldn't get in the house, but never thought to tell our children not to ride our bicycles behind the cloud of toxic chemical that was being emitted into the neighborhood.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's just basically spraying carcinogens
right in their mouth. Yeah. Right in their mouth.
Yes. And then the best part was a response that another follower gave to Gail. So Gail D88 was the woman who played Bugman. But then Laura Lulu 67 responded with, funny, I had to share your bug spray story with my husband, as I've heard him talk for years about kids in his Memphis neighborhood doing the same thing. Got to admit that I wasn't sure I believed him. It sounded way too far out. You have vindicated him.
You're welcome.
I do remember basically getting dunked in Off.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But no sunscreen ever. No sunscreen, bug spray. Yeah.
I just remember for me, yes, all the games that we're about to talk about on this list, I think that most of them I played at one point or the other. But for me, make-believe games were my jam. Some of my earlier memories of neighborhood games would be when I was in about second grade and we lived in a townhouse and we had this big rock kind of in the middle, like of the cul-de-sac. And it was just a big rock, but it was like they made the thing around it. The road went around it. And we called it Elephant because it was supposed to be like an elephant and it was L-E font. And we climbed it and it was like, who could ever get to the top of Elephant? Basically, it was like, in my memory, it was, you know, 50 feet high. And if you, and I could try and I knew where to put my fingers. It was like our 1975 version of, you know, rock climbing,
wall.
Right?
Right. The
rock
wall. Vertical endeavors.
But we had so much fun playing different games. Like all the neighborhood kids would gather at Elephant. My sister recently went back there and she sent me a picture. Elephant is still there in the neighborhood because it's a rock. You guys, it's probably 10 feet tall. At most.
And I bet it was base. I'm sure that was base.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
But that's my thing. And then things like in third grade, making up dances with my sister and her best friend, Penny. Now, understand, they were like big sixth graders. So, but they included me. Longtime listeners might remember, this is where my choreography for That's Rock and Roll came from. So we always did dances. This is the neighborhood. We would all get together. and make up, we would do talent shows. That's where I would sing like Barbara Streisand songs and things. But that would comprise our play, right? We would all be like planning it and working. We painted rocks and sold rocks. We did that kind of stuff. We went door to door. You know, we were door to door rock salesmen.
We did that too. We sold rocks.
Did you really?
Yes. I think we sold like two. We probably spent all day knocking on doors and sold two rocks. So you have make-believe games, but then there are also made-up games. And we had one that we called NIMBY. So this is not based on a movie or a TV show or a book. This is a game game. And it's called NIMBY, which involved a badminton net strung up between two trees and as many tennis rackets as you could rustle up in the neighborhood and a bouncy plastic ball, like the kind that you would get at the grocery store where they'd pay up. They'd have a big bin. And they might have like, they might be in fun colors. They might have swirls on them or stars or something like that. And so basically we were playing badminton with tennis rackets and a playground ball.
That sounds so fun right now. I would do that
today. But we named it, right? It was, we thought it was something quite profound.
Oh, yes.
It was important enough that we named it NIMBY. Mm-hmm. And speaking of tennis, you guys, for how many hours of your childhood did you spend hitting a tennis ball against the garage door?
Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I can't imagine how many hours. And I would narrate in my head that I was like Chris Evert.
Of course.
And so I would, the crowd would be going and I'd be hitting it back. And then, you know, I would jump up and down when I'm in my imagination had just won, you know, the U.S.
Wimbledon.
Open or something.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So I, because remember, like, we just, we knew who Chris Evert was. We knew Martina Navratilova. We knew Billie Jean King.
They were Bjorn Borg. And his headband.
He loves saying,
I love Bjorn Borg. I still
Jimmy
love Bjorn Borg.
Connors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Van Patten kid. Was it Vince?
Oh,
was
Vince.
Was he a tennis player?
Well, do you know we follow him now?
No, oh my God.
He was, no, excuse me. He was ranked. He was a big deal. And now we follow him on Instagram. Vince, if you're listening, yes, we do follow you.
We love your headband, Vince. We love it.
I like his puka shell necklace.
Yeah.
He still, I think, kind of wears a necklace, and I think he wears a headband. He is a big pickleball player.
Of course he
That's
is.
That's what he does now. And he'll be like in a chair, but we're out at whatever, Culver City Courts. Come on out. We've got a beer truck. We've got a food truck. It's pickleball all night. He does that. And he's also a professional gambler.
Wow.
Yeah. So he didn't stick. Doesn't appear to be that he stuck with the acting, but he did just a couple months ago. He had to get knee, he had knee replacement surgery.
Okay.
And so we had to like follow him through his rehab, and when was he going to get back on the pickleball court?
That not on like, the tennis court, but on the pickleball court.
No, it was on the pickleball
court.
Oh, God.
I just think about, like, the thunk, thunk. I'm going back to the garage door now.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because it wasn't the side of the house. It wasn't a wall. It was the garage door, and your garage is hollow, so it would be thunk, thunk, thunk. And my mom would be like, my God!
Yes.
Stop it with the thunking.
Hard to thunk.
There's so much about this that is summer, too, because I remember so many of these memories are more indelible in summertime because you just couldn't believe how late it was. The whole idea of it staying light, late, it felt like daytime, but dinner was hours ago and you just couldn't believe it. And every minute was a minute your mom wasn't calling you to come home. It was like stolen time. There was so much more playtime because of that.
Yes, and I loved the fact that I was allowed to play after dinner because during the school year, once we had dinner, like doors were shut, everything was done. You couldn't go to a friend's house to watch a TV show. You couldn't play outside. But it was such a hard and fast rule in my house that summertime and playing outside after dinner was such a treat. And this little snippet of time within a year that that was allowed. And it was everything.
I want to ask you guys how your moms called you in, because my mom had this bell, and it it's just a little brass bell, but it's loud and clang, 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 and all the neighborhood kids gathered kind of in front of where our house was. But that bell would start ringing, and it would just be so funny because all the neighbors kind of then would know, oh, it's time to go home, because nobody else really had. You'd hear them calling their names, but my mom had this bell, and she would just put her hand out the door and ring it, and people would be like, oh, Melanie and Michelle, you guys have to go home.
That's for everybody.
And then they would know that, oh, I guess we should, it's probably time for us all to go home. And when I was just visiting my sister, she, in another room, and she just stuck her hand in the door and rang the bell. And I was
oh my God.
No. She goes, I've got our bell. I know, she has it. So it was kind of a fun sound to hear again.
We actually had a bell that was adhered, installed, I needed the right word. On our house. There was a bell on the house.
Oh, did you have, like,
so
the clang,
ours was a clang, clang, yeah. clang, clang, clang. Mm-hmm. Yep. But everybody in our neighborhood had their own sound. So it was sort of like a coordinated thing. So ours was the clang, 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 clang. Somebody had the whistle that went, and I just remember Clem Chase going out with his beard, with his little whistle going, and that meant that Anne and Katie had to go home.
Yeah.
The memory that's very clear for how I got told to go home. My sister would have to come get me. And my mom would say, probably to my sister, Ronnie, go outside and tell Carolyn it's time to go home. So I would see her coming and she'd be like in front of everyone, Carolyn, mom says it's time yeah. to come home now. And I would be like, okay, I'm coming. No, she said now.
You didn't let Ronnie play with you guys?
Maybe I was allowed to stay out until 9, but she had to come in at 8 yeah. or mm-hmm. something like
that. She had to come in for her bath.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Probably, because now I'm thinking, I hope we took baths after those nights of being doused.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no,
no.
No,
we didn't. Then we just got in our sheets.
With your off, deep woods off.
I'm probably still protected against mosquitoes to this day for how much off I absorbed.
And nobody said a word. I remember getting in bed and like getting a whiff of deep woods off when I would like pull the covers over me.
Yes, yes.
Nobody said a word.
We filled this tent with 10,000 hungry mosquitoes and biting flies. But they're not biting me. I'm using Deep Woods Off. It repels even the toughest mosquitoes and biting flies.
Well, as you can imagine, when we asked our listeners and our followers to tell us what their favorite neighborhood games were, we got a ton, and I mean a ton of comments. Hundreds, okay, you guys? So this obviously meant a lot to a lot of us. And it was so fun reading the comments because, again, stuff that we thought we were the only person in the world, like, or our little neighborhood was the only place that they played NIMBY. And then all of a sudden someone's like, we played NIMBY in Arkansas. Yeah. And so I loved coming across those moments, kind of like the bug man, that these people are like, oh my gosh, me too. And
yeah, it's it's just that. Another example of how we had a shared childhood. Even if we didn't live in the same house or the same city or the same yes. region of the country, mm-hmm. we still had a shared childhood.
Yes. And so we took all those comments and guess what, you guys? Carolyn did the math.
Oh,
so I know it's a little scary. I would not like bet my life on these results.
Were there any ties?
Oh, there are a couple of ties. Oh, okay. There are always ties.
See?
So, yes. So we're going to count down the top 10 Pop Culture Preservation Society neighborhood games from the Gen X era.
Woohoo!
At number 10, we have a tie!
Yes, a tie. Yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear it for the tie.
A tie between flashlight tag and kickball.
I just wonder where you have enough room in a neighborhood. I guess if you have like a field nearby or something,
cul-de-sac.
That's where you play kickball.
The street.
Oh, a yeah. cul-de-sac, of course.
Cul-de-sac. Car, mm-hmm. car.
Yeah. Yep.
And then you all had to spread. So yeah, we played in the street. But like, I remember a light post would be like first base. Because would be, you know, and then you'd have something in for second. And then there'd be like a mailbox for third and you'd have something for home.
And if you lived in a new neighborhood, like I did several times where I had a new house and next door to me was a vacant lot.
Vacant lot, yes.
Where a house had not gone
those
off
vacant
yet.
Vacant lots, mm-hmm. so great. But what was funny was I hadn't even thought about the yelling car thing, you know, probably in, I don't know, last time I yelled car, probably 40-something years ago. Kristen Schwark, one of our followers, said, we lived on a cul-de-sac so we could play softball, kickball in the court, and we had bases set up and would yell, car at the top of our lungs should someone pull into the court, and we'd scatter like cockroaches exposed to light. As soon as I read that, it was just like, again, Husker Du, the
yep,
because I could hear the car and yep. everybody scattering. It's such a visual. And
nobody was scared, and our parents didn't think we were getting hit by cars.
And another memory from kickball or wiffle ball or any of those games that you played where you had for second, third base, and mm-hmm. home run was this little fact that I had forgotten that Chrissy Hayes reminded us of. She loved playing kickball in either a small field or a yard. They used rocks or tree stumps as bases and ghost runners. Do you guys remember ghost runners?
No, what's
runners?
A ghost runner?
A ghost runner is like if someone had to go to dinner or something, what are you going to do? There was like a ghost on base.
Like a real ghost?
Like, so like there's... Yeah,
just
you just said ghost runner, and then let's say they're on first base.
It's like a pinch hitter or something, right?
Like someone who hits for you. It's not a real Well, here I thought I'd be Husker doing you guys, and you never had Ghost Runners. Well,
no.
Well, a lot of people had Ghost Runners, and it was basically when you either didn't have enough people on your team or someone had to, like I said, go home early or go to dinner. And it was just this pretend person that would move along the bases. So
an invisible person.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how do you know if they get to base?
You just let them kind of get to the base, except like, let's say.
No, it's a real person, right?
No, it's not.
It's really a ghost? Yes. I'm so confused.
Okay. How do you agree?
Do you agree? Because it's the rules of ghost running.
So I
it's universal rules.
Do you just watch it as it runs and everybody's head's going at a different.
Like. Okay, so let's say I hit the ball and I run to first, but then I have to go home or maybe I have to get to the back of our rotation because we don't have enough people to bat. And so you say ghost runner. And so there's a ghost runner on first base. Now the next person comes up and they hit it. Now the ghost runner runs to second base.
How do you know if they make it or not?
Well,
can you get them out?
And I think this was an agreed upon rule. Yeah, I think if you could get it to the second base person before the first base runner got to first base, that could count, if that makes sense.
Then that would count that the ghost runner was out.
But what if the ghost runner runs faster?
Well, you know what? You had to negotiate.
How do you know how fast a ghost runs?
I want Chrissy Hayes, if you're
let us know, Chrissy.
Please let us know what your ghost runner rules were or anyone else listening, because ghost runners came up a few times.
Well, also because Chrissy Hayes says the ghost runners always started fights.
Right.
So that makes sense, because I would be going, no way, our ghost is safe. And the other team would be like, no, I got your ghost out. And I'd be like, prove it.
I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Flashlight tag was our other tie at number 10. Mm-hmm. And just tag in general, like flashlight tag, obviously a particular one. Did you guys play flashlight tag?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure
but
we
I never
did.
Knew. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I ran around a lot.
Well, yeah. it's like you tagged, but by shining a light on someone. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to actually physically touch them like you would in maybe some of the other tag games.
I feel like that one started a lot of fights too, though, because it's like, no, it's just it my didn't shoe touch me. Up. Mm-hmm. You know, you always had those kids in the neighborhood that would never, ever, ever like succumb to being tagged.
Never.
Mm-hmm. There was always an excuse. I hate those kids.
Who did they turn into as adults? Don't you wonder?
Cheaters? I have a couple ideas,
Oh.
There's one name I could say, but I won't say it out loud. And I would like, if anyone knows, blah, 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 please let me know what they're doing today.
I would love that because I want to see if it lines up. Are they still cheaters?
Or they lied. They just would lie about liars? So many things.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Or did you ever have those kids, if they were losing the game, they'd be like, you want to start over?
Oh, yes.
Yep. Like, no, I'm not starting over just because you're losing. Mm-hmm. No. All right. Moving on in our countdown. In the number 9 position, I fought Carolyn for this one because originally she gave me a different game. And I'm like, no, I need this one because this was my favorite game. I loved it so much. In our number 9 position is statues, or as we called it, statue maker. We played Statue Maker. I think I loved Statue Maker because it was a little bit theatrical. It was a little bit physical. It was a little bit harrowing, a little scary, and it was always hilarious. And if you don't remember Statue Maker, here is how it's played. It's complicated. Everybody just stick with me. So one person is the statue maker, one person is the buyer, and everybody else gets to be a statue. And the statue maker makes the statues by grabbing your arm and swinging you around, possibly fast enough that you take flight. That's the goal, right?
They launch you.
And then they let you go. And he just, let's go. Just let's go. And sometimes you flew across the yard. The position you land in is the position of the statue, which you hold. You have to freeze like that, because you are a statue. And before the statue maker swings you around, they might ask you salt, pepper, or red hot pepper. This was the speed At which, oh, we should see Carolyn's face right now. She is so whiskered, she can't even make noise.
Salt, pepper, red hot pepper. Yes. I'm barely.
That's right. Yes,
I can't even.
Yes, salt, pepper, red hot pepper. So they're asking you, what speed do you want to be swung around at? Please excuse the grammar on that sentence. So salt was moderate. Pepper was fast, and red hot pepper was getting flung across the yard. And it was very, I never said red hot pepper. Never.
No. Too scared. Depends on who the statue maker was, too.
Yes. Well, and the statue maker was generally one of the big kids because they could lift you. They could fling you into the air. So after all of the statues are in place, then a rich old lady comes to the studio to pick out a statue to buy. This often involves accents.
You gotta use an accent for sure, right?
And you can't laugh because you're a statue. You have to freeze. And the statue maker might also explain to the rich old lady the significance of the statue or what it represents. And again, there's no laughing in their accents. So someone said they played this variation, and I think we did this too. Sometimes the statue maker could tap the statue on the head during his presentation.
And you could move.
Yeah. Yes, and you could do a move like, of some kind.
Like almost like a robot.
Yeah. It could be related to his explanation of your significance, or it could just be something funny, completely random.
The tap on the head.
Yes, the tap on the head. And then, and hopefully it would crack up the rich old lady. And then the statue stops moving when the statue maker again taps them on the head. And I remember part of the fun being that once the rich old lady has made her decision about which statue she's going to buy, then they would have to transport the statue into out to her car. So they'd be trying to pick you up and you had to hold your position.
Yeah.
And again, not laughing because you're a statue and they're everybody's trying to pick you up and get you out to the car.
I remember one variation we had on this game was if we didn't have a statue maker that could swing you, like say, Kristen, you're a statue and I'm the statue maker. I could just walk up to you and grab your arms and be like, lay down.
And
I could like put you in the position that I thought was hilarious. Like I might have like one of your legs in the air and one bent and one hand on your head. And so we did that a lot. Yeah, that was a top request.
So fun. And you guys, you know what visual I just got when I was thinking about being swung around and then you'd kind of land is when you'd get those grass stains, like kind of scrapes on your knees, but they were green
because
you had like kind of skidded through the grass. And so you weren't necessarily bleeding, but there were a bunch of scratches and your knees were green.
Yeah, your knees were green.
Oh, that's green so knees. You guys, think of all the different places we lived.
Like, I know.
It's so specific, like art dealers and I can't even explain how amazing, I guess, and wild I think that that whole thing is.
I want to know how many people, okay, listeners, let us know if you ever broke a bone playing statue maker. I want to know.
Well, I can tell you we have at least one listener who broke a bone. Pam Binkowski told us that she played swinging statues all the time until
a teenage
girl swung me and broke both bones in my arm.
Oh.
And I was probably 5 at the time.
Oh,
Two broken bones.
Oh, no.
I know.
And I love that she calls it swinging statues, too.
I've never heard that one. That might be what we called it. That sounds familiar now, more than statue maker. Also, don't you know that not only does Pam have a memory of that, you know that teenage girl's never forgotten that either.
Somebody broke her. She broke someone's arm.
Mm-hmm. And Kimberly Lynn, another follower, responded to Pam's comment. And this is, again, what I love. She has in all caps, OMG, I thought me and my cousins made up swinging statues. It was an actual game.
Oh. Here Kimberly we are, all Lynn, three of us going,
yes.
Swinging statues. Yes. That's 100% statues. What we called it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. Yep. So, so fun, but yet dangerous. But
yeah, super dangerous.
To tell the tale.
Oh my God. And nobody cared.
Well, has it ever felt like you're doing everything right, eating healthy, working out, but your energy still crashes or those wonky mood swings hit out of nowhere?
Oh, yes. But I've got to tell you, Michelle, that has gotten so much better since I have been taking Hormone Harmony. It really does make a difference. And I recently took their free 2-minute quiz. I learned that menopause can have my hormones all out of whack. Hormone Harmony helps to fine-tune my hormonal system, and it helps maintain optimal hormone levels. It's helped with my menopause-related brain fog, my quality of sleep, and really overall well-being. I just feel better. And I also feel good knowing they only use proven science-backed ingredients in all of their herbal formulas. And what's great about the quiz is that it will recommend the best product for you based on your answers and your particular hormonal needs.
Yeah, I love that they actually have a whole line for your gut health, like Bloat Banisher. Is that TMI? I don't know. If you're ready to start feeling like yourself again, head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with our code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Coming in at number 8 is specifically Charlie's Angels.
Specifically Charlie's Angels.
Specifically
not
Charlie's Angels.
But Charlie's, mm-hmm. Okay, that's significant.
I could not believe the mm-hmm. amount of people that said Charlie's Angels.
Wow.
As the mm-hmm. official tallier of these votes, you guys. Because I thought that I was maybe the only one who played it until, of course, we had our episode where we mm-hmm. talked about Charlie's Angels.
We all played it.
You guys did.
Yes.
But then even then, I thought, well, you know, we're who we are, and we have this podcast,
right.
We're a little different. So I thought maybe it was just the three of us, maybe a few more. It comes in at number 8, people.
It does,
I can't believe it.
Wow.
I'm going to share with you some very Charlie's Angels specific comments in one second, but I wanted to share that some of the other TV-inspired games that people did mention included Emergency. God, that would be a fun one to play, though, right?
Yeah.
And, of mm-hmm. course, Land of the Lost. And we all talked about that when we talked with Wesley Uhr.
You just run. Look behind you and run.
Yeah. We. Mm-hmm. Mel's Diner.
Fun. That's so funny.
Come on. Like, how fun is that? I would just always be like Vera exploding the straws, yes. You know? Battlestar Galactica, Nancy Drew, and... Mm-hmm. This last one, my sister and I played all the time, Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, we played that all mm-hmm. the time. Yes.
Yeah. A couple of our listeners commented with more performance-based approach. Jen Wittes said, performing Grease. We can't neglect to mention that because that is something I know the three of us all did and probably 90% of our listeners.
Yep.
And another follower commented, Donnie and Marie. And I believe Kristen had a good story in our Donnie and Marie episode mm-hmm. about that. But yeah, we used to play that all the time. I would like to be, I think I took all the roles on. I was also the Ice Angels.
Yeah.
And then I was Donnie and Marie.
Yep.
And I will say that, you know, we're talking about neighborhood games a lot, but I don't think we should neglect to mention that people that might have lived not in a neighborhood, right? You had a lot of people that lived out in rural areas. And so you just really, you played with your siblings.
You played
and so
with your siblings.
That does mm-hmm. mean you played a lot of make-believe.
Yeah.
And even though Charlie's Angels, you have three, that doesn't mean two people can't cover.
Ghost Runner.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ghost Angel.
Ghost Angel.
Ghost Angel. Ghost Bosley. Ghost Bosley. Ghost
totally.
Charlie. So I want to read, share some of the really fun comments we got. Erica Johnson says, my cousins and I played Charlie's Angels, pretending to catch bad guys and use guns. I was always Sabrina by default because they would fight over who would be Kelly or Jill.
Always.
You know, Sabrina, come on.
I know.
It seems
I want to be Sabrina.
Right. It mm-hmm. seems like people didn't want to be Sabrina.
It's always
as much.
Third choice.
And our friend Shane, 87 Ragged Tiger, says Charlie's Angels. I was always Bosley. But then he makes sure to have like a footnote that says, while secretly seething with envy, I could ride the skateboard better than any of those girls. But because he was the boy, he had to be Bosley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Susan Caraway Strickland says, my friends and I also play Charlie's Angels. We would make up a case and then would hide behind the trees and run around the yard to catch whoever was the designated bad guy. So basically, a little bit of hide and seek plus tag. Being the bad guy was fun. We always had to have a long discussion over who was which angel. And of course, we did the stance with the guns.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The pose.
Yeah. Did you guys, you said you always wanted to be Sabrina and, mm-hmm. and Carolyn, if I remember correctly, you were Kelly,
she
right?
Wanted to be Kelly.
You wanted to be Kelly. Yes. That's right. That's right.
I had to be Farrah.
Poor
Carolyn.
I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be Jill.
But yeah, I bet there was always like some sort of negotiation involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, with Charlie's Angels, I mean, I think 50% of the game was the negotiation that came first.
Oh, God.
of who was going to be who, because everyone had their favorites.
And if you could still be friends after that negotiation was over, then was great. Say, you could still play the game.
But was there even a negotiation? There wasn't in my neighborhood.
Yeah, you were told.
Like, yeah, that's exactly right.
Because Kelly had to be Kelly, right? Wasn't your neighbor named Kelly?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
End of discussion.
My sister always wanted to be Sabrina. My sister even had a poster of Sabrina, like Kate Jackson as Sabrina. Brie. You guys can picture it. She's wearing like a white vest and white pants and like the pointy collar. And she kind of has the little page boy shag.
Yeah.
My sister had that poster in her room. She loved
I want that poster
Kate Jackson.
Now.
Okay. And then some other comments about other make-believe games that we just loved. Honey West 1117 says, we played Mel's Diner and cooked food for each other using dirt, rocks, and hose water. You guys, that's so pure.
Like mud pies.
It is.
The
hose.
That is pure summer fun.
Yeah, it is.
Making mud pies, with the little twigs and the grass you would put on for like the topping. Laura Lulu, 67, says, mandatory concerts performed on back porches for our hapless family members to such classics as Don't Cry Out Loud. Can you imagine the emotion they put into that one?
Oh my God.
And the night the lights went out in Georgia.
Dramatic.
I don't know about you guys, but when my own kids would put on these shows for us, we would always be like, okay, hold on. We have to go get a bottle of wine because there was no way we could get through those without.
And they never end.
Because
you never planned an ending. And I remember my parents would be like, they'd start to clap. Like they were just telling us like, oh, it's over. Yeah, it's over now.
Exactly.
No, we're not done. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Clapping.
Mm-hmm. I read a comment from one of our followers, Bianca Quill Hair Studio.
Whoa.
I know. Bianca, are you a hairdresser? I'm not sure. But anyway, she said, we played Kiss, okay, in quotation marks, meaning we would act like we were members of Kiss and air guitar or drum, et cetera, and stomp around while blasting our Kiss records.
Did they draw on their faces?
I hope really they painted
hope they
their faces.
Yes. Yeah. She didn't say whether or not. So Bianca, we would love to know. Yes. Did you?
I don't know.
Go all out with the
they took mom's makeup and they put all the, they put Kiss makeup on. I really, and then they got in trouble because they didn't ask to use mom's makeup.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Used all her black eyeliner to make your cat whiskers.
Yeah.
Okay. Makeup Whisperer. I love this comment so much. I remember playing Donnie and Marie in my driveway. I was Marie and my brother's inflatable weeble-like punching bag was Donnie.
Oh, I know. Like, I had a Bozo the Clown one.
Yeah.
Yes, and you hit it.
We had a Batman one and I just got Oscar Dude remembering that I would play maybe that it was also Donnie, but in a different way.
Oh,
my bedroom.
Carolyn, getting creative.
I kissed that thing.
Good for
and
you.
I would like, but it never could lay flat.
Wait, you're lying down?
I tried sometimes, but it would just flip up.
Practicing making out with Batman. Oh my God.
And LMA114 says we would have a parade every Saturday with bike tricks, baton twirling, and a record player. And that just reminded me of our neighborhood talent shows too. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
That was one of the places to show our baton twirling skills.
Yeah, where else are you going to do it?
I know.
I've shared this before in an episode. I can't remember which one. We would play Seven Alone, which was, I can't remember if it was
a
made-for-TV movie.
It?
Yes, well, there was a novelization that you could get through the Scholastic book order, and it had the photo, but it came from TV, and I think it was on Disney, or maybe it was a made-for-TV movie. And at one point in the episode, I said it was a knockoff of Little House on the Prairie, and we got a comment where she was like, no, it wasn't a knockoff. She felt she had very strong feelings about Seven Alone, and she still had her novelization from the Scholastic Book Fair. I was so jealous. But it was basically a covered wagon drama. And so we would, I remember creating a covered wagon, but only in our minds. And we had something to climb up on. Because of course, when you're in a covered wagon, you're up high and then somebody's behind you down low. And then they're the bad guys maybe down at the front of you. And it feels like we were climbing up on, you know, like Elephant, like a big rock.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what it was we were climbing up on. And if you were lucky, you still had your bonnet from when you did the second grade play. And you could wear your bonnet up on the rock when you're sitting on the covered wagon.
See, the make-believe games are the best, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And if you're playing Seven Alone or you're playing Narnia, there's a variety of siblings. And so there are always people in the neighborhood that you could include. There's always a little kid. There's always an older brother. And then all the ones in between. It's sort of like playing Brady Bunch. There was room for everybody to be involved because somebody has to be Cindy. So that's going to be your little sister who's in kindergarten. And then there has to be a Greg. So everybody is involved.
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother.
Okay, guess what, everybody? Number seven, tie.
Another tie. Right.
Mm-hmm. Another tie at number seven. First was Mother May I.
I loved Mother May I.
Yes.
And, you know, I forgot. I mean, I remember the game, but then when I was rereading the rules, getting ready for this, I had totally forgotten some aspects of it. Like, I guess I'd forgotten that you, as the mother, you kind of faced away from the people, you know, the people were behind you.
Oh,
tell me if it's Mother May I or a different game where you would tell the person, as the mother, what kind of steps to take. So if they said,
mm-hmm. Yes.
And you would say,
baby
you
steps.
Can take three scissor steps. Do you remember scissor steps? Did you guys
Which one were scissor steps?
You go sideways and you crisscross your steps.
Yeah,
that's how we did it.
Crisscross your legs.
Like a grapevine.
And then they'll say, Mother, may I? And I loved being the mother, and I'd go, no, you may not. Kristen, you can take four scissor steps. And she'd go, Mother, may? And I go, yes, you may. And, yeah. I think the reason you have to turn around is probably because you can't play favorites, right? Because you would say, if you're like, Carolyn, you can take 12 giant steps. Yes. And Carolyn's almost steps. To me. And Kristen's back there like, the fuck? What?
Uh-huh.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I'd be like, Kristen, you can take 7 bunny hops. And Mother May I? And I'd say, yes, you may. And all of a sudden, you know, she hops like past Carolyn. And then I'm like, I don't want Carolyn to win. So I'm going to keep going with Julie.
All right. Then we have Ghost in the Graveyard is our other game coming in at number 7. Did you guys play Ghost in the Graveyard?
I wanted to so badly. I really, really wanted to. I would play it today. Every Halloween, I say to either my husband or my child, who will go to the graveyard with me? And nobody cares. Nobody will go to the graveyard with me.
You know what? Our follower, Jenny Seek, not only did she play Ghost in the Graveyard, she did it in the actual local cemetery.
Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
no,
what
I would never. Oh, no, I would never do that.
Oh my gosh. So you have a designated area, kind of like a home base, maybe like you're yelling ghoul, because if they, you know, you're trying to touch it, and they're like, base. And you have to return to it before getting tagged by the ghost. So there's somebody that is the ghost, and then you are the. Then there are ghost hunters. So I think you're trying to find the ghost, but you don't want him to tag you before you reach the safe zone. Does that make sense?
Till you reach base.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Till you reach base.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a little bit like all those like kick the can type games and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all variations on a theme.
Yeah.
But I think once you put the word ghost and graveyard in there, it takes on a whole different kind of feel. And plus, these would be ones you played in at night once the
that's why
came on.
This would be, yeah, this is a nighttime game. That's why there are ghosts involved.
Kind of like flashlight tag and that kind of thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in our number 6 spot, this is so old school, I can hardly stand it, but it also makes me super happy. The 6th most popular neighborhood game in the PCPS Top 10 Countdown is Hopscotch. So simple. So basic.
Yes.
But you guys, I'll be honest. I never knew how to play hopscotch. Not that I played it. I definitely played it. I did not know what I was doing. It was like hop, hop, put your feet down. You throw a rock, and then you got to pick the rock up.
Hop,
and then I pick up the rock.
Yeah. On 1 foot.
On 1 foot, two
usually.
Foot. 2 feet, 1 foot. But I am just, basically I'm doing a dance. I don't know what the goal is. I don't know what I'm trying to do. And I think the most important part of hopscotch was drawing the configuration on the sidewalk. That could take days, and you might never even get to the playing part, and that was
fine. How long was your hopscotch?
You just got to make it pretty.
Like a block.
You got to make it pretty. And this is so depressing. So because I'm like, shit, I don't know how to play hopscotch. So I Googled it, and this is what comes up. Hopscotch, a programming app for kids to learn to code.
Oh.
No. I know. I was so sad. I was so sad.
I just making a note for myself to get some sidewalk chalk. So I was on a walk one time like last summer, and I'm just walking along, and on the sidewalk in front of someone's house, they had just drawn a hopscotch thing. And of course I see it, so I'm going to do the hopscotch. And I thought, I kind of love that idea, just in front of my house, just draw a hopscotch thing. So when people are on walks, adults too, you don't have the raw, you don't have to do it, you don't have to know the rules.
Just
you can
hop.
Just do the 1 foot, 2 foot, 1 foot, 2 foot, 1 foot, 1 foot, 2 foot, one. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
You can make it however you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think let's all do that. Let's go get some chalk.
Idea.
And just, if you live in a neighborhood, just draw a hopscotch.
And just see how many people stop and do it. Mm-hmm. Just sit by your window and watch. Yeah. That could be a Saturday afternoon. I'm going to see. I'm totally doing that. Yeah. I'm gonna watch how many people do it.
But wouldn't it be interesting to take a tally? Actually, we should do it.
Yes.
Let's do a tally.
You know what's interesting, though, is the kids coming by may not know how to play hopscotch.
Oh, no. That's
but the people our age will. This will be an interesting experiment. We're going to write down what generation they are, you know, just from eyeballing it.
Yeah.
And I bet a lot of them are our age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I say at our next PCPS listener get together, Carolyn, I'd love for you to teach us hopscotch. And that could just be something people do off on the side.
I love it.
Yeah. There's some cardio involved and there's balancing involved and all of that. So yeah, I love a good hopscotch. I wonder how it got its name. I don't know.
Well, there's hopping on one foot.
And drinking scotch.
Now that is a neighborhood game.
Yes.
Now we're talking. You can't spill your scotch when you go down to get your rock. You're on one foot. Don't spill your scotch. Go down, get your rock.
I love this idea.
Okay. Coming in at number five is red light. Green light.
Green light.
Green light.
Yellow light.
Oh, yes. I thought about yellow light.
You have to go slow.
Okay.
You have to walk slow.
So I wanted to do a little history on where does this come from? Is there an origin of red light, green light? And there were some different names of it, and they think maybe Great Britain. But the version that Grace, my daughter, is most familiar with, and the one that a lot of people are, would be the Korean version called the Magungwa Flower Has Bloomed. Now, you guys, the red light, green light was featured prominently in the Netflix series Squid Game.
Oh,
that's what the game is.
Oh, my God.
And as Grace explained to me, if you went when you weren't supposed to and that kind of thing, you got shot. Like, I never watched Squid Game. That's what it is.
I didn't watch it either. Yes.
That's why it's so scary and awful, but it has a resurgence, I guess.
Like, shot
dead? I mean,
that's
how Grace kind of knows.
Yes, you die.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you did green light when they said red light.
Yeah.
You got shot dead?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm laughing because there are dead people.
Yeah, there are dead people. And it really ruins the game, the childhood game now when we're talking about it. Like,
it does ruin the game if somebody gets shot.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, coming in at number four is your just tried and true, everyone. Your basic hide and seek.
Now, or hide and go seek.
Hide and go seek is what we used to call it all the time, which is pretty self-explanatory. Now, there are, as we know, a lot of variations. We've already talked about flashlight tag. Our favorite in our family was sardines. Did you guys ever play sardines?
No, but I don't know anything about it. It's the greatest thing
to play at like a slumber party. It's so fun. So basically, one person, the person who's it, goes and hides. So let's say, Kristen, you're it, and you go hide in the closet, right?
Oh, but I know it now. I know it.
And okay, now everybody else starts looking for you, but you're silent. And if someone opens that closet door and sees you, they just quietly get in. They don't yell, I found her. They just quietly get in and hide with you. So basically, you're all squishing into the hiding place.
You're all in the closet.
So it's eventually very funny. You're in the bathtub with the shower curtain closed. And eventually, the person opens the shower curtain and there's 12 people. Like if it's at a slumber party, they're all squished in there. It's really fun.
Okay, I would play that right now. That sounds super fun.
Well, I wanted to research and try to find the origins of hide and seek, hide and go seek. But instead, I got sidetracked when I saw that there from 2010 to 2017, there was a hide and seek world championship. It was an international competition held. The last one was in 2018. It was held annually in Consano, Italy, which is a ghost town. And it's basically the Italian version of hide and seek is called Nascondino. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. Participants had to be 18. Basically, it's hilarious if you go on like YouTube and just watch them. And all the teams would like dress in different things and they would just scatter, and then they would all be hiding in like the woods and everything. The winning team was awarded the golden fig leaf, which was a symbol of hiding from the story of Adam and Eve. Now, when I Googled something about which hide and seek, I don't know. I was trying to find out a little more information. And you know how when you type something in the Google box and all the most commonly asked questions come up underneath it? The first most commonly asked question that people ask is, which hide and seek world champion was found dead?
Oh, God.
Oh, you guys, if you're watching this on YouTube,
during the game,
I almost just made Carolyn choke. She was drinking something when I said that.
Yes.
Yes. So, of course, I clicked it.
Oh, my God.
And here's what it said. I have to say this without laughing, but you guys' reactions are, you guys, your faces right now are so funny.
I'm wondering if this was in 2018 and why they don't have it anymore.
Yeah, that and put an end to the game.
This answer was from September 30th, 2018. Okay. So maybe it says, world. I have to try to read it like a newscaster because I don't want to laugh because poor Darren
Somebody
Hayes.
Died.
World hide and seek champion Darren Hayes. He's champion. World hide and seek champion Darren Hayes has been found dead in a wardrobe.
Oh my God, he was playing Narnia.
Police have confirmed. Officers say Mr. Hayes, 37, disappeared 2 weeks ago while training for the next world championships.
Oh my God. Wait, how do you train? You just go find
closets? Just go hide, I guess. I'm guessing his whole team was what? Like, I don't... Well, let's think about it. How do you train for hide and seek? You get your team together and you say, let's go play hide and seek. Let's
I'm
practice.
Training right now.
And he went into the... Where's Kristen? Where'd she go? Oh, there she is.
I'm right here. I'm right here. I was training.
He was training and he was obviously the previous champion and he went and hid it in a wardrobe. I could have dug deeper, but I didn't have time.
It's probably like that PSA where somebody hid in a refrigerator and they suffocated.
Well, here, I'm going to tell you right now from the Suffolk Gazette. World hide and seek champion found dead in wardrobe. Officers say Mr. Hayes disappeared 2 weeks ago while training for the next world championships. They say he was practicing with members of his family, but he was so good they were unable to find him.
This is on April Fool's
Police
Day.
Police spokeswoman Lorraine Fisher said officers were called to an address in Haverhill, Suffolk after the discovery of a man's body in a wardrobe. Unfortunately, Darren Hayes lay undiscovered for weeks while training for the hide and seek world championships. His family had looked under the bed, behind the curtains, and even behind the door.
This is stupid.
But none of them had thought to check the wardrobe. It's believed that Mr. Hayes' family got bored and stopped looking for him after 4 hours. Tragically, he died from dehydration and was only found when his wife, Eleanor, went to hang up some
shirts.
No,
that is such a... That is like the Onion. The Suffolk Gazette is like the Onion.
Wait.
Oh my God.
It's awfully sad, says Mrs. Hayes, but he was so good at hiding that none of us thought to check in the wardrobe. But it's how he would have wanted to go.
He's the winner. He's the ultimate champion. He
you guys,
won the game.
Yeah, this yeah. has to be a joke, mm-hmm. right?
It has to be a joke. We're going to tell you if that's real
some
or
fact
not.
Checking.
Why wouldn't she check in the wardrobe? I don't understand why
my
she
question,
check in the wardrobe.
My biggest clue that this is can't be true is that it was his family and they just gave up and then
yes, they
found weeks later. Couldn't you bang on the wardrobe? Unless he's like, I don't want him to find
me.
I can do
be
without
found.
Water for another day.
He's training.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I might have to go without water for 3 days next week. I mean, and was he found like in his own excrement?
Well, oh, no, this is what happened. He was preparing. He stopped drinking days previously so he wouldn't have to pee.
Oh, good.
And so he got in there dehydrated.
Yes.
He was planning ahead. Like, just bring a Gatorade bottle with you.
He could have died within hours.
We
don't know.
Like Charlie's Angels right now.
Yes,
we
are.
We are solving the mystery of the world champion
hide-and-seek killer.
You're welcome, mm-hmm. Hayes family.
Yeah.
So I do have a story to share, though, because this is kind of an emotional story from Erin McInnes Douglas, one of our social media followers and listeners. And she said, evidently, one time I played hide and seek with a school friend after school at the schoolyard or our yard. I don't remember this particular day. But apparently, she says it happened sometime in 1972 or 73. We must have been 10 or 11. So she says, fast forward 40 years later. I had a family of my own and we were living in Seattle. Our old school landline phone rang. And when I answered, I was surprised to find it was my friend from way back when. So she says, after catching up with our lives and family stuff, she let me know that she had been diagnosed with breast cancer and that she had something on her mind that had been bothering her for a long time. Couldn't imagine what it could have been. Well, it turns out she remembered this particular day very well. And she said, do you remember that day we were playing hide and seek? And Erin said, I don't recall, no. Next, she confessed that she had ditched me during the game and went home because she didn't want to play anymore.
Oh, my God.
I truly felt bad that I hadn't remembered something that she had been haunted by for so many years. She must have felt that she needed to make amends before passing on. Her call touched me, and she was my first friend that I lost from our class of 1980.
Oh, sad.
She reached out to, like she said, making amends. And like that's something that had just weighed heavy on her.
Ditching is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And we took it very seriously. That's like a capital offense if you're a child, ditching somebody.
I know. Well, Erin, we're sorry for the loss of your friend. And also, thank you for sharing that story with us because, wow.
Right now, think about all of those friends that you played with in your neighborhood. Where are those people right now?
Yeah.
Oh, my neighborhood people. And these might be the people that you played our number three most popular game with. Our number three most popular game in our top 10 of neighborhood games, according to the PCPS. I'm going to go back to our author of When Allie Summer, Ann Ilvesacker. She says, most of all, what I remember is kick the can. She says, I can't remember the rules exactly. And truthfully, I think there were a lot of games where there were no rules.
Yeah.
And you just made them up and you pretended, like I said, that was settled law. And she says, but it involved an empty soup can set upright in the middle of the alley. One person was it, and the rest of us ran and hid. The point was to leave your hiding place while the it person was looking for everyone and to be the first one back to the can without getting caught. You won if you were the one to kick the can. The noise of it would bring everyone back. Getting to kick that can down the alley was exciting, of course, but I also remember the thrill of the hiding places, like sneaking into some forbidden yard of a neighbor without children, or the spooky dark under the untrimmed pine tree at the corner house. There was a call, too, to Ollie Ollie Oxenfree or something like that. I think that was when you were free to go sneak around to the can.
I'm surprised this wasn't the number one.
I'm kind of surprised,
too. When I lived in Washington, we played kick the can all the time. And the way we played, we flattened a soda can. And so the person who was it, like when they were counting, they had to kick the can down to the streetlight and back. And that meant everybody would run and hide. But she's right. Then our flattened can stayed there. So when the person was going to look, if they found you, if they could see you, and you saw, like, say, you know, Jason is it, and he sees me behind the tree, he can run and he can jump over the can and say, over the can on Michelle.
Wow.
But if I see that Jason has seen me, it's a foot race, right? That also little Michelle's never going to win. Because if I get to the can before Jason, I'm going to kick it and then I'm safe. It was so fun. We loved it. We played it so many nights in the summer.
It's not funny. I never knew how to play. I just pictured it was like Leave It to Beaver time. And I thought you just kicked the can down the alley.
Yeah, I never played that. But it was just always referred to, whether it was in a book or something like that. It was, and when I was asking Andy, did you play any neighborhood games? He said the only one he could remember was kick the can.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And we never played
it. Yeah, so can is like base, but you don't just touch it. You got to kick it.
You got to kick it.
Yeah.
And I love how she says the noise of kicking the can is what brought everybody back.
Yes.
We didn't play kick the can, but we did play something we called shoe can, which was a pop can, as we would have said in Minnesota, or a soda can. And you stomp down on it with your foot. You lay it on its side and you stomp down on it so that it curls around the sole of your shoe.
Yes!
And now it sticks to your shoe. So now it's like you're wearing tap shoes.
Yes. I used to do that all the time when I squash our cans. Yeah.
You know what? We didn't have like soda cans very often. I'm thinking I must have done that with beer cans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course you did. Of course you did.
Run around like Schlitz or whatever, Pabst Blue Ribbon cans on my feet. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten about that.
I chugged it quick and then I put it on my foot.
Yeah, we love to clomp around in beer cans and whatever.
Coming in at number two is Red Rover, Red Rover, send Kristen over. And we're all holding our nose.
Oh, God, do you remember when it would be like, send Jason right over, and Jason would make a beeline, like for mine and Kristen's arms.
Right.
Because
we
were
going to
be the weakest link.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it would hurt. Like a lot of times you would just
let go before they even got there.
Yes.
It would hurt. And I remember pairing up with Maura Jones, and she would hold my hand so tightly, and she would rub my knuckles together. And it was like, the more painful it is, the better we were at the game.
That's right. The tighter. Well, that means your hands are really tight.
Yes.
I never got through. Like, they knew. The other team was like, yeah, we're asking for Michelle to run over first. Because I would, like, basically be skipping over. Well, twirling my baton.
A couple of people mentioned like raising their arms right as the person got closer. So you would like you could clothesline them
in the neck.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I ended up like Darren Hayes.
Adam's apple.
Yes. Yeah.
End up like Darren Hayes dying. Oh God, playing a neighborhood game.
Death by Red Rover.
I can honestly say that I don't have one memory of us playing that in the neighborhood. For me, it's always in like at recess.
Recess. Yeah, yeah. Agreed. Because you needed a lot of people.
Yeah, you needed a string of like 12 on each side at least. Yeah,
that's true.
That was a classroom game.
Are you all ready for the number one neighborhood game as voted on, as determined by the followers of the Pop Culture Preservation Society? Drum roll, please. And that is freeze tag. Now, we've already mentioned several variations of tag. I loved all the variations of tag, even though I was always one of the its, right? Yeah. I can never keep it up with all the freezing. Like if I'm trying to unfreeze people, you know, and usually I read a little bit about it. It said usually there was two people. Oh. I remember only having to play with one. And it's like shoveling your sidewalk while it's snowing. You know, I could never keep up. Or I'm freezing, and then everybody else is running around unfreezing. But that is the number one of all the variations of tag we've talked about. One that didn't get mentioned that I loved, obviously, because now I love doing this, what I do, is TV tag. Did you guys ever play TV tag?
That was actually my friend Kristen. It was her number one game was TV tag.
Yeah, it was my number one type of tag for sure. But it didn't make our list. But freeze tag did. So yeah, freeze tag was the
and
the
TV one that, tag, if I recall correctly, if you called out the name of a TV show, then it couldn't tag you.
Nope.
Like and you're getting close, so you'd go, happy days.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But then the next person can't say happy days. Right. They have to go, Three's Company.
Right. No, so by the end, you're like really reaching for shows because you're like, those have been said.
Johnny Carson.
Hornswell.
Okay, so here's some that didn't make our countdown and a few that Husker Dude'd me. One that was so fun was Simon Says. I loved Simon Says.
I loved Simon Says. Yeah. And I really wanted to know who was Simon.
Oh.
Like, I was so literal. I'm like, well, who is he? Oh, and I had an image in my head and everything of who he was.
That's a really good question.
That's a good question. Then people talked about a game that I played in a classroom. It was 7-Up. Did you guys play a neighborhood?
Yes. Was there something with your thumb?
That's the classroom game.
Okay. But this one had to do with a ball and like a or something.
Oh, you throw it up in the air?
People just talked about the ball.
Good
and
guess.
7-Up.
You throw it?
It's a good chance that, yes.
Yeah. It's like you throw it up in the air and then everybody scatters, but then somebody has to catch it.
Oh,
that sounds or is that Spud?
Oh,
is that
that's Spud? My next one on here is Spud.
Oh, what?
I didn't know Spud.
Tony also mentioned Spud. Tony, who said ghoul, he had a whole list of them, and Spud was one of them. And I feel like maybe that was Spud, where you throw it up in the air and everybody scatters, but then the person who throws it maybe says a name, and then you have to run back and catch it.
There's actually a Wikipedia entry for this. Basically, the leader gives everyone a number.
Yeah.
The leader throws the ball in the air and shouts one of the numbers.
Yes.
Everyone whose number was not called starts to run.
Oh. Yeah.
The player with the assigned number catches the ball and yells, Spud.
Yes.
Everyone freezes
in
place when they hear this. The player then takes three large steps
toward
any of the players. Oh my God, we played this all the time.
Yes.
The other player can move any part of their body except their feet. So they can catch it. They can dodge it.
Thrower
gets the letter S. If the thrower hits the player gets the letter.
Husker Du. And then the other one that Tony mentioned, and this was a Husker Du moment for me too. Annie over.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't sound familiar?
No.
Okay. Annie over is when you have two teams on either side of usually it's like a garage, or it can be a fence, or it can be a hedge. Before you throw the ball, you yell, Annie over. And then they have to catch the ball. And if they catch the ball, then they can run around the garage and throw the ball at other people on the team to get them out.
Okay.
Annie over.
I love that we are probably Husker doing the wazoo out of so many of our listeners right now.
Somebody's going, oh my God, Annie over.
Memories like the corners of my mind.
So many of the things that we talk about on this podcast are now gone. they're things of the past, and we miss them, but maybe the kids of today are like, no way, man, our way is better. And so, you know, to each his own. And sometimes they're right, but this one might be different. This is absolutely not how childhood goes today, as we've discussed. I'm sure there are exceptions out there, and thank God for that. But for the most part, childhood does not look like this anymore. Evenings are full of sports practices and away games. Things are scheduled, and you're chauffeured there by your parents, and they pick you up, and they take you home when you're done, and then you play video games and watch YouTube shorts until bedtime because you're so worn out from practice. And some people would say that we, the neglected generation, missed out on important opportunities. But if I had to choose, a million times over, I'm choosing NIMBY. And statue makers, yep, and TV tag, and Charlie's Angels, and hopscotch, and kick the can. A million times over, mm-hmm, I'm picking that instead of away games. We had freedom. We had so much creativity. We had spontaneous collaboration, and we were happy. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time.
I feel like going out and rounding up some neighbors.
I know.
Going and buying a ball.
Yes.
Or maybe I'll just go buy a ball. Yes. And we'd like to give a special thank you to our supporters on Patreon. Honestly, we could not do any of it, the podcast, the social media, without you. And today we are thanking these patrons: Nina, Lynn, Patty, Valerie, Rochelle, Mindy, Susan, Joanna, Carolyn.
Yeah.
Not that Carolyn.
Thanks for supporting us, yeah. Carolyn.
Jen, Cindy, and Diane. Thanks so, so much to you and to all of our patrons.
Yes, we so appreciate your support, and we appreciate when you share your love of the podcast with others. Share it with your friend, share it at work, share it with your family, share it on social media, share. Also, if you haven't yet, we would be so grateful if you would leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen. That really helps us with that whole algorithm thing and more people seeing us. And then, of course, the more people that see us, the bigger our society gets and the more friends we have. And it's all good. Joy, joy, joy. So please do that right now.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.